I suggest that we have a moment of silent prayer and meditation for the two members that we have
recording in progress.
National Assembly, Honorable Mackenzie from the Democratic Alliance and Honorable Maluleka from the ANC, and all the people who have lost their lives during the violence and the COVID-19. Can we have a moment of silent prayer and meditation? Thank you very much. We have decided to call this meeting to take stock of what has happened in the past week or so, and the plans that the departments have, the NPA, Correctional Services and Justice, to deal with the aftermath of what has happened, because we know that as justice, immediately after all these abnormalities has passed, the abnormalities will start from our side. People will be expecting prosecutions, the jails will be full. So we thought that it would be important that we get a briefing from the minister who is here. Thank you very much, Minister. We know that you received an invitation within such a short space of time, but you decided to be here. And I know that you have apologized in cabinet in order to brief us. We thank you for that. And to thank all our honorable members who have made themselves available within such a space of time, short space of time. Let me take this opportunity to give this time to the minister. Minister Lamola, maybe before, we have three presentations, colleagues. It's, in fact, let me say it's the opening remarks by the minister and the three presentations. Can I be guided by the meeting? Do we want to have all the presentations done at once, or do we want to have one presentation at a time and then we ask questions?
Maybe we should have one at a time and then we can ask questions to the particular issues. Otherwise, it becomes too much information.
Okay. Any difference?
It's not a different view, but then we will obviously depend very strongly on you to effect proper time management so that we don't run out of time.
Okay. No, I think members should also be straight to the point and not have too long of preambles. Let's just step straight to the point. The presentation...
Chair, I don't know if I'm able to make an input on this. Would it not be better to combine the departmental, the justice input and the NPA input, because they both deal with the courts, and then a separate one on DCS? I'm just worried about people asking things of the department that actually the NPA would want to answer. So I'm just raising that as a concern.
They are overlapping.
Yes, because they deal with the courts.
Can we agree to that, members?
Agreed, Chair. Agreed, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's be straight to the point. Let's not have long preambles so that we can be able to accommodate all presentations and give a fair enough amount of time to all of them. Let's start with the minister. Minister, welcome, and over to you.
Thank you. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and the members of the Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Minister responsible for the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Honorable John Jeffrey, and the Deputy Minister responsible for the Department of Correctional Services in his absentia, Inkosi Olumisa, the Director General of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Advocate Mashabane, and the team, the National Director of Public Prosecution, Advocate Shamila Badoyi, and the team, the National Commissioner of Correctional Services, Arthur Fraser, who is not there in this platform, and the team of the Department of Correctional Services led by Mr. Mbambu. Honorable members, the recent eruptions of violence and looting in South Africa are an unprecedented assault on our constitutional democracy, the social contract, and the rule of law. In the past week, we all saw that the foundation of our constitutional democracy were tested, and still many citizens in our communities stood firm and showed our country's unwavering commitment to the rule of law. Honorable members, without doubt, our country has come to witness what was said in the matter of Rex versus Wilkie in 1768. Presiding over this matter in England, the Chief Justice in that court said, "We must not regard political consequences, however formidable they might be. If rebellion was the certain consequence, we are bound to say, Justitia fiat, reot colim, let justice be done, though heavens may fall." This principle has subsequently been further codified in our constitution in section 9, which states the following: "Everyone is equal before the law and has the right to equal protection and the benefit of the law." Our analysis reveals that the unrest and incidents of violence we witnessed in the past week were occasioned by a confluence of issues. The violent act of banning of national key installations, disruptions of economic activities, blockades of national roads leading to disruptions of key supplies such as food, medicine, electricity, telecommunications, and so forth, with dire consequences for the thousands of people. Some of it could fall squarely within the parameters of the protection of constitutional democracy against terrorist and related activities, Act 333 of 2004. This Act of Parliament is one of the critical pieces of legislation designed for the protection of our constitutional democracy. Law enforcement agencies have to investigate all those who violated the spirit of the Constitution and all legislations that could have been affected by these violent acts we witnessed in our country. I personally walked the streets of Soweto in Gauteng, Tembisa, Kamalake in KwaZulu-Natal, respectively. I saw and witnessed very disturbing scenes. Our old scars as a nation were reopened. Racial tensions which simmered in our communities really boiled over to a point where the ethos of the National Democratic Revolution got derailed significantly. Now more than ever, we should not question whether we are united or in our diversity. We now need to show it. Now more than ever, we should not theorize about Ubuntu. We need to show it, as many of the people of our country have started to show it through the rebuilding efforts, the cleaning campaigns, and their efforts to protect some of the key infrastructure. Our heroes and heroines are not those who destroy, but those who build. As former President Nelson Mandela once said, it is easy to destroy, but difficult to build. Honorable Chairperson, from our perspective, we need to ensure by all means that our criminal justice system remains firm. In order for us to ensure that the wheels of justice continue to turn exceedingly fine, we have issued directions which, amongst other things, have the following effect: manage case backlogs arising from the unrest and the backlogs that we already had from COVID-19, as well as cases emanating from the public violence and the public disorder that erupted in KwaZulu-Natal and spread to Gauteng and other parts of the country. The backlogs will be managed by ensuring that we have the priority role for cases such as gender-based violence and femicide, sexual offenses, corruption cases, partly heard cases, and trial ready cases where the presiding officers decide to include. Furthermore, the directions provide opportunities to implement special measures to address the spiraling case backlog occasioned by the hard lockdown. Honorable members, our direction also provides for alternative dispute resolutions mechanisms. In terms of the directions, the National Prosecuting Authority may, where the accused is charged with a less serious offense, in respect of which an admission of guilty is permissible and justified, fix an appropriate amount as an admission of guilty in respect of the accused person concerns. This the NPA will have to assess independently on their own on a case-by-case basis. This creates an opportunity for diversion in respect of children. It facilitates the involvement of other community structures to facilitate restorative justice. And it creates a mechanism for non-custodial sentences as a form of restorative justice to minimize overcrowding. Integrated management and coordination of the current situation. The honorable members, we have also reworked our operating model. In a period like this, we cannot afford to work in silos. We have an integrated task team on the management of unrest and related cases. The task team convened by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development comprises of the National Prosecuting Authority, Legal Aid South Africa, the South African Police Service, and the Department of Correctional Services. It has specific terms of reference. It must receive and validate reports and statistics from both Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal, attend to blockages across the criminal justice system value chain, address escalated matters for decisions and escalate when necessary, facilitate resource allocation when necessary, adopt a project management approach to resolving operational challenges, consider and address concerns and views raised by magistrates, the NPA, and the various role players in the justice system. The National Prosecuting Authority has also considered operating the operational impact of the unrest. KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng provinces bear most of the challenges. Chief among those challenges is the limited staff at offices due to COVID-19 related reasons, as well as transport problems occasioned by the unrest. Another challenge is overcrowding of the South African police service cells, as well as those of correctional services. As a result of quick processing of detainees will be required when large number of arrests are made. The operational plan will address collaboration between the NPA and the SAPS, correctional services, and the whole court system. Many of these cases will likely amount to theft than mere possession of stolen property. In collaboration with the SAPS, emerging cases will be divided into four categories: actual looters and persons participating in stealing from shops and outlets, persons found in possession of stolen properties, groups and individuals stealing property in big quantities, organized or planned action, enticement or incitement of public violence. Experienced prosecutors have been assigned from organized crime and priority crime litigation unit. Crime heads in the provinces under the direction of the Director of Public Prosecutions are assigned to deal with more complicated and serious matters. Honorable members, in terms of the NPA policies, where it is justifiable, cases which relate to people in possession of stolen goods or people who participated in looting may result in restorative justice or alternative measures such as admission of guilty, diversion, and plea agreement as a means of finalizing them. From a correctional services perspective, we are required to reconfigure remand detention system that is already overburdened. We have received a high number of remand detainees in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng region as a result of arrests made for recent criminal acts and violence. To date, a total of 1,498 remand detainees have been admitted in our facilities. This was as of last yesterday's count, Honorable Chairperson. The numbers could have increased. Our facilities are stretched due to overcrowding. Our challenges are also exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. However, we continue to mitigate against the challenges through various measures. Both regions of Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal are coping, and they continue to admit new inmates. We ensure that the new detainees are isolated for COVID-19 screening and observation before they interact with the general inmate population. So, honorable members, rest assured that no one who took part in the acts of criminality will evade justice. Our institutions are working together to expedite all matters before them. Justice will take its course and the rule of law will reign supreme. I thank you and will want to ask the chairperson to allow the Director General of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and the National Director of Public Prosecutions and also the National Commissioner to present before the committee detailed plans around the matters under discussion. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. Members, I think you have had an opportunity to go through the presentation yesterday, and I think it's quite clear that the issues that the Minister has raised also appear in some of the presentations. Can I ask, with your permission, that we go straight to the DG, because quite a number of the issues that the Minister has raised appear in both presentations of the MPA and of the Department of Justice, that before we ask questions, we allow the DG and the National Director to present so that we can have a comprehensive approach in terms of dealing with the questions both to the Minister, the DG, and the National Director. Will that be in order, members?
Agreed, Chair. Let's proceed.
Thank you very much, DG.
Chair, thank you very much.
Before you proceed, DG, I've been made aware that the Deputy Minister of Correctional Services has joined. In fact, he is using an iPhone, so he is we could not be able to see him, but he has joined. Good morning and welcome, Deputy Minister.
Good morning, sir. Thank you very much.
Good evening, sir. Can we proceed to teaching?
Well, thanks, Chair. I'll ask Advocate Skhosana. It's a 5 to 6 slides, which won't take more than 10 minutes, just for him to briefly speak on some of the issues. I think the Minister has already provided the broad framework. He can just fill in the technical details that are in those slides. Advocate Skhosana?
Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Minister, Deputy Ministers, DG, and I really appreciate the opportunity to to be the convener of the task team that the Minister has spoken to, and I'm just going to focus on how we're going to depart. That is the how part from what the Minister has said, and the how part is going to be basically driven at operational level, and I think I will not repeat what the Minister has said. And the first part, I think, the how part goes into the whole issue. Next slide, please. On the whole issue of how the courts are going to manage the two roles. As you know, members, courts every day they've got their own role in terms of who they put cases on the road to be heard in a particular day or so. And what's intended through this process, there would then be two additional roles. One over and above the normal role. There'll be a broker role, which means I've spoken to, which basically looks into cases which can always be dealt with even under hard lockdown. And those are GBVF cases, corruption cases, a case of accusing custody to ameliorate the issue of overcrowding, as well as contraventions of COVID-19 and cases involving children. Those are probably cases. Now, over and above the project, Ron, the unrest which erupted in cases and Gauteng allow enabled us to provide in the special the separate role. Separate role is how it will function in bigger centers where it is a very big, difficult to deal with all at the same time. The judiciary have agreed that they will basically facilitate the creation of a specialist role. A special role is akin to the need to create what you call specialist trials, or if you not special courts. Remember, special courts deals with special jurisdiction. Specialist role, it means the court still deals with general jurisdiction, but those cases are dealt with in a special court, which have a continuous role, which means the case starts and continues every day until an end, without it being postponed intermittently over a period of time, etc. And I think the view with this is to ensure that cases arising from the unrest are dealt with speedily and effectively, and that they are lined up for quicker handling, etc. Now, the next slide. I've indicated, that basically articulate the special role. Now, if we go to the next slide, slide is going to talk about the whole issue of the budget. The budget, can you continue? Because obviously these mechanisms entails the need to provide additional resources that should deal with those aspects. What we're looking at, Chair, is to firstly prioritize what we have in terms of the budget. But my apologies, Chair. Sorry about that. Yes. What we tend to deal with this aspect, Chair, is that we are looking into the prioritization of what we have from the baseline budget. And secondly, we are also looking into earmarked funds. Earmarked funds are funds which National Treasury provide for specific aspects of programs. We have earmarked funds, which are basically ones for special commercial crimes courts. We have earmarked funds for integrated criminal justice mechanisms, the CJS budget. And we are going, and already those earmarked funds in terms of the directions from National Treasury already provide opportunities that they can then be tapped for this kind of processes. The over and above that, we are also looking into the issue of the CARA funds, which cabinet have already been approved in terms of certain specific interventions. So we believe that those three arrangements give us the opportunity in the immediate term to start putting measures in place to allow the separate roles as well as the property role to start unfolding. What are the OCs of the special role? It means we can get additional capacity. As indicated, special role means that you can get a court running parallel to the normal role, where cases of arising from the unrest are dealt with on a continuous basis. So those magistrates and those prosecutors will then be people who are not necessarily involved in other cases. They only focus on those cases which are unrest related. The other important principle in the directions is that those cases can be dealt with or can be tried in any other district if on the basis of security and practicality, those matters cannot be dealt with where the incident occurred. And the example, I think, in Gauteng will be around the area, the courts in Benoni and Davidson, where you found that in terms of the office space, into the number of accused persons who need a bigger court, where the police can basically work around their own security measures. You need a court with all the equipment that are required in space, etc. And the directions by the minister allows that the NPA and the judiciary can move those cases around to all those within the province to be dealt with in the centers where it will be appropriate and convenient for those matters to be heard of based on security concerns and based on practicality. The last part I wanted to emphasize is the task team that the minister alluded to. We are meeting every day, and in our meeting, we look into one, ensuring that we unlock challenges and blockages that occurs on an ongoing basis. We get reports from the provincial task teams. At the provincial level, the task teams will basically comprise the NPA, the department, regional head, as well as cross-national services, the very same people that makes the national task team will also participate at provincial level. Every day they look and monitor how the cases are unfolding, and then they submit reports to national office. At the national office task team level, we are able to respond in terms of decisions which are making, which are required at our level. If need be, those can then be escalated to a minister, and those can even be escalated to cabinet. And all this, all these mechanisms by the integrated task team is to ensure that the speedy response to the issue that require either resources, either budget, either appointment of judicial officers, or either intervention or by cabinet, and so that we do not basically frustrate all the processes that are going to unfold. And the last point is that there will be a routine or a regular interrogation of the states that come from the course. We want to see the extent to which these measures are making impact on those cases. A separate role will enable us to look into how those cases, either they be cases of murder, or they be cases of stolen goods, or they be cases of, possession of stolen goods, or they be a case of aggravated theft, how those cases are being dealt with on an ongoing basis, so that we are able to have a clear rapport that can minister can present both to the to parliament and to cabinet and to the president as and when those processes or when as and when those kind of information is required at any given time. So the task team is there to make sure that all the project management approach to the operationalization of these measures is being attended to. We are meeting every day. We'll meet at evening, and we'll meet in the evening so that we look into what happens at the court during the day and what is the plan that will happen at the court the next day. And those meetings, the task team does not operate separately. It forms part of the existing governance structure. So the task team will then feed into the JCPS DG's cluster, which feeds into cabinet. It will also feed and lies with the structures, especially the Chief Justice, like your case flow management structures. Those are the provincial efficiency enhancement committees, as well as the regional efficiency enhancement committees. It will also feed into an important structure chaired by Deputy Minister, which we established a year ago. That is the cost optimization committee, which looks into unblocking challenges. And the importance of the structure is that the members of the judiciary are also part of the structure. So concerns that come from the magistracy will then be dealt with around the space. Concerns that come from the legal aid and all the, our social partners are then being conversed in those structures. And the task team makes sure that those aspects are being coordinated and resolved, and there's intervention to address those matters so that we are not going to basically allow any further delay from the organization of this measure. I'm going to leave it here, Chair, and I'm sure we'll then be able to elaborate in terms of responding to questions that may come from the other members. Thank you, Chair. The next which comes then is the specific that will then be provided by the NPA and the DCS. Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Minister, and honorable members.
Thank you very much, Advocate Kosana, Advocate Patoy. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. If I may ask our colleagues in the department to please flight the NPA presentation as we discussed yesterday. That will be appreciated. Chair, whilst that is being done, perhaps I can say to the committee that I will present a very brief overview and high level in terms of the approach and the way in which the NPA is approaching this crisis at a very, very high level, and then Advocate de Kock will deal with more of the detail in respect of what we are doing. So, Chair, perhaps it would be appropriate to contextualize where we at the moment. 2.5 years ago, we were looking at trying to address what had happened, particularly the corruption issues in the past 10 years. And then about a year ago, we had an added complication in terms of the global pandemic. What followed then was procurement corruption. We then had to deal with that. And now we have an attack on the people of our country. And so the reason why I highlight this is because, there's been this huge demand as a result of all of this on the Department of, on the Justice JCPS cluster and law enforcement in particular. And throughout this process, it has constantly exposed very serious weaknesses that we have in our system. But what it has also done is that it has really constantly strengthened our resolve to keep fighting, to rebuild, I think, what is our battered country at the moment. And they say injustice flourishes when good people do nothing. And good people in law enforcement and in the NPA are really rallying around to ensure that we can change things, that we can rebuild our country, and that we can really, as the minister said as well, ensure respect for the rule of law, which means that everybody is equal before the law. Where we are also highlights, if it wasn't clear enough before, the real importance of having a truly independent national prosecuting authority. A lot is being said in the public space about arrests and perpetrators, about inciters, etc. But we want to really make it clear that the NPA is clear about its mandate, and that the NPA takes instructions from no one. We follow the evidence and we proceed accordingly. Those responsible must be held accountable, and that is clear. And as the minister said, together with our key partner in dealing with this, and that's the South African Police Service, we've sort of identified three categories of perpetrators. Let's put it there. Category three is your low-level perpetrators. Category two would be your mid-level, perhaps your what is being referred to loosely as your organized looters. And category one would be your high-level perpetrators, being the instigators and the planners. And we collaborating very closely with SAPS to ensure that in respect of each of the categories, we have a very clear but different approach to how we deal with this. Of course, SAPS is the lead agency, being the ones that actually investigate. But the NPA is working very closely, particularly in the category one, let's put it that way, in terms of ensuring that our efforts are coordinated and that we put our best people forward to ensure that those responsible are held accountable. I've chatted with the National Commissioner, and Advocate de Kock will talk to the various levels of coordination that's happening with the police. Chair, as the minister said, with the lowest level perpetrators, we should understand that even though poverty may have driven some of the actions of people, it should never be a reason that we commit crimes. But the NPA is empathetic, and we understand, and we need to consider, as the minister said, each case on its merits, and where it is justified, we will consider dealing with these low-level perpetrators in terms of our restorative justice policies. But as we move up the chain, together with SAPS, we really have to be relentless in ensuring that our coordination is very clear and that we bring to book those most responsible for what has happened in our country. I want to emphasize again that we will follow the evidence and nothing else, and that we will serve only the people of this country and no one else. The minister actually mentioned, even though the minister is the executive, and we work very closely with the minister and the department, and the minister is very supportive in terms of ensuring that we're able to do our work in the manner that we were meant to. So, you know, it's very close collaboration. And it's clear from what the minister said, you'll see I also included the Latin maxim, fiat justitia ruat coelum, let justice be done though the heavens fall. So I think what is clear is that we are certainly on the same page, that we need to do everything that we can to ensure that people are held accountable. But at the end of the day, the NPA will act independently and follow the evidence. Chair, with those opening remarks, I want to hand over to Advocate de Kock. I think he's also got about 10 slides or so, and perhaps he'll also be about 10 minutes in terms of the more of the detail about how we're organizing ourselves. Advocate de Kock.
Thank you very much, NDPP. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members of the committee, honorable Minister and Deputy Minister, and all colleagues, thank you very much for the opportunity to present some of the operational work of the MPA and to account for our work around this particular issue of the recent unrest that has occurred throughout the country. Since the beginning, when this arose, the MPA was hard at work with our colleagues in the SAPS to make sure that we can cooperate with each other and collaborate with each other effectively, and so that the MPA can understand as well what our response needs to be under these difficult circumstances. So I am not going to repeat a lot of the overlapping issues that have already been covered by the Minister, the NDPP, Advocates Kosana. I may wish to highlight just a few areas relevant to our work, and particularly relevant to the work of the police, and where the MPA's mandate determines how we enroll cases onto the court rolls. So the first point is just to make the point that as the EXCO of the MPA, we have convened special EXCOs under the leadership of the NDPP. As soon as, and let's keep the slides by slide three, just a brief further introduction. We have convened, sorry, go back to slide three, please. Back to slide three, please. Thank you. We're still on slide three. And we also immediately communicated with our directors of public prosecutions in all our various divisions throughout the country so that we could position the directors of public prosecutions and the prosecutors who are at the coalface of where the work happens with us. And so we requested that on a daily basis, prosecutors would be reporting to us in terms of matters that are referred to them for decisions and matters that are then placed onto the court rolls. So the information that I present is the information that we've obtained from our prosecutors, but we've also worked on this through the system of the department and the court system. But again, to make the point that these have been very difficult times, particularly in KZN, the courts have been disrupted to some extent, initially in the first week, and some of the information is still being updated. But currently, according to the best of our knowledge, this is the information that we have. So during the first week, from the 7th to the 11th of July, 2021, 170 new cases involving 190 accused were enrolled at the courts. During the second week, from the 12th to the 16th of July, we have figures of 618 new cases involving 1,249 accused enrolled at the courts. And then the current week, from the 19th, which was on Monday, we have 69 new cases involving 110 accused enrolled at the courts. We have made the point that the SAPS have been arresting and that the SAPS did receive some challenges in terms of the numbers initially, but those numbers have now dissipated. And many of the perpetrators or alleged perpetrators are now also in custody at DCS facilities. Those who have not received bail and those who are still busy with bail applications. Those who have been released on warning, where appropriate, have been released. So to a large extent, the situation is under control as far as the management of individuals through the system, through the entire value chain of the justice system to DCS. And as indicated by the minister, the department, DCS, have indicated, although they do have overcrowding issues, they are managing the situation as far as they can. If I can move to page four quickly. Can we move to page 4, please? Thank you. As far as the initial operational impact is concerned, it became clear quite quickly on, and I'm sure that we are all aware of this, that the main areas where the disruptions occurred was in KZN and in Gauteng. By all accounts, KZN has been affected the most. We have noticed, and we that as far as other divisions are concerned, it was only Northwest where we had a few cases. Northern Cape and Free State, but largely in all the other provinces, we didn't have any significant unrest-related matters that were reported. One of our biggest challenges has been that all of this happens while we are also struggling with the pandemic, and there will be a slide later on, and I'm sure the members of the committee have seen that particular slide that indicates the impact of the COVID on the prosecution as we speak during the month of July. June and July has been the highest, and I think we currently have about 125 infected MPA officials who have COVID. And of course, this impacts on the functioning of our various offices and the courts, because if one prosecutor or one admin official was infected, the chances are that other people will have to isolate and not be at work as well. And that impacts dramatically on our ability to process work correctly. So there are large numbers of accused in some cases brought to the courts. We identified initially that the statements prepared by our colleagues in the police were not adequate, and then some of these matters could not be enrolled. But we have initiated cooperation with the police as far as that is concerned, and there's ongoing sharing of information regarding what is required for the purposes of a proper docket, and then also what is required to sustain certain charges that we may want to put in relation to each individual accused. We have also looked at the question of how we prepare for the issue of bail hearings, so that we are satisfied that when we release any individual back into society, that there is no chance that this person may again go and re-offend by committing similar offences. Where the prosecution is alerted by way of evidence through the investigation that any perpetrator or alleged perpetrator has the tendency to recommit, the state will certainly be opposing the bail of such individuals. We must protect society at all costs. We must protect life, and we must protect property. And that is part of the mandate in which we are approaching this particular issue. If we can move to the next slide, please, page 5. Chairperson and members of the committee, this is just broadly setting out the approach that the prosecution follows in each matter. Of course, the Constitution and the rule of law is paramount in terms of how we do our work. And when we're under pressure, it doesn't mean that we jettison the law or the principles that underpin the way in which we do our work. And so we will consider each case through the normal principles and the guidelines and the policies of the prosecution. We have already referenced the policy of mediation and the policy of restorative justice will apply in appropriate cases. There's no reason why it shouldn't apply, because the law must be applied equally, despite what the circumstances may be that prevail. Deserving accused are released on bail. I've mentioned that we apply the principle of no case, no enrollment. We spoke about that, and where we found that the investigation was inadequate, we have asked our SAPS colleagues to urgently correct those issues. Accused in prison, as the postponements arise in the future, will be remanded with audiovisual through the systems, and we are also working hard with our justice colleagues to ensure that all the systems throughout the country, where the prisons are linked to the courts, that all those systems are working. It's one of the priority areas for directors of public prosecutions as well. And we must ensure, particularly since we're also dealing with a COVID pandemic, that that system is fully operational. That is a key priority for us. It's a key priority for the department, because it's one way that we can limit the movement of people between prisons and the courts. Then we make the point that many of these matters amount to theft, as well as possession, or being in possession of stolen property. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. If I can move to slide 6. So we have through our own analysis and with the police identified these areas. It's been mentioned before, but just to emphasize those four areas, the actual looters, individual looters who participated in the stealing and the looting from shops and outlets. Then there's the category of persons who have been found in possession of stolen property. This is an area that is being worked on as we speak, because the idea must be that anyone who has committed an offense of this nature will not get away with it. We will still continue to investigate, and we will still continue to recover property. And where people are found in circumstances where they cannot explain their possession and they are not in lawful possession of property, certainly those, there must be consequences as well. So that is an important category that will be ongoing as we move forward. And so in terms of the restorative justice approach and the mediation approach, this is the area where potentially we may see prosecutors being involved with this kind of approach. Let us bear in mind that all these accused will receive legal representation. Legal aid is part and parcel of the National Committee, or the Steering Committee. And again, the rights of everyone will be protected, as is required by the Constitution. So when we talk about restorative justice, or when we talk about mediation, this is done under controlled circumstances where prosecutors who have been trained are then engaging with legal advisors or legal representatives who act in the best interest of the client. So that is how we will ensure that justice ultimately will be done in those matters as well. If we can move to the next page, it's slide 7. So this is where we become a bit more serious in terms of how we categorize the offenses. These are then, the third category would be the groups and individuals stealing property in big quantities, organized or in a planned way. So these are people who are criminals by nature and who seize an opportunity to commit crime for profit. And so we take these matters very seriously. These matters are overseen by the senior prosecutors of each director of public prosecutor's office. And we place this work in our organized crime components. These colleagues are particularly trained and skilled to deal with organized crime, and this category of the work is clearly organized crime. So we must not be afraid to call it out for what it is. It is crime, it's organized, and where we find that syndicates have been in operation here, we will charge people with racketeering, and as we know, people can get life imprisonment for this kind of offenses. And the fourth category would be the incitement or inciting public violence. Again, experienced prosecutors from our organized crime components are assigned to this work, but with the one exception that it falls within the mandate of our priority crimes litigation unit. And there we will then start to see that where there's evidence that justifies offenses that may fall well within the protection of constitutional democracy against terrorists and related activities Act 33 of 2004, the Terrorism Act, When we see that there's evidence that justifies prosecutions in terms of these provisions, the state will not hesitate to prosecute. There are a number of other offences that flows from this: sedition, high treason could be one of the offences. And I think that we need to understand the seriousness of all of this. And so certainly from the MPS point of view, these are matters that are under consideration, and we will prosecute to the extent necessary within the context of the law, those perpetrators where the evidence justifies this kind of approach. So, Chairperson and members of the committee, that is in a nutshell, broadly, the categories that we've identified, and that is how we've divided up our resources within the prosecution along the priority lines that I've just spoken about now. If we can move to the next page. It's page 9 or page 8. Chairperson, we've agreed, sorry, it's page 8. Chairperson, we've agreed that it wouldn't be correct for the prosecution or the police to come with detailed operational plans to the committee. So we apologize before we start with this slide by indicating this is a very high level overview of the coordination structures within the security departments of the state. And we do this deliberately so that all the detail of what we are doing and how we are working is not up for discussion. To the extent that there may be questions relevant to this, we will be happy to respond as best we can to that. There are the daily meetings of the Joint Operational Committee at the national level, involving the state security departments, the South African Police Services, South African National Defence Force, and the prosecution are also involved, not from an operational planning point of view, but from a point of view of understanding the flow of work, the flow of where operational activity may take place, and how cases or arrests may take place. And so our involvement is simply to ensure that when cases are brought to courts, that we can effectively respond to the demand as it comes to our courts. There's a national daily coordination body that's been set up between the SAPS, the DPCI, the MPA, and of course the National Prosecution Services of the MPA and the AFU, more importantly, are also involved in this. These colleagues are meeting on a national, on a daily basis as a technical team. They are having an overview of the work, of the cases, and this is with lots of planning of individual investigations are taking place. We know of the role of the NAT joints as far as the national coordination is concerned. And then at a provincial level, we've got the provincial prof joints that are also functional. We did receive a report from the Director of Prosecutions in KZN that also because of COVID and because of the disruptions in KZN, the operations of the prof joints has also been disrupted. Colleagues, of course, are now meeting on virtual platforms as well. And I think the technology that we now have at our disposal has really assisted us to be able to move, to meet quickly, to be able to move effectively, and to be able to meet at any time of day or night to discuss matters. So I think there's been one great advantage that the COVID has brought us, and this is our ability to move quickly through the technology that we now have at our disposal. And then finally, Chairperson, where the bulk of the work in the areas of the categories 1 and 2, where those offences are investigated, there is a direct relationship between the detective branch commanders, the station commanders of each police station under the detective services of the South African Police Service, and the senior public prosecutors who are responsible for the management of the prosecution at each local magistrate's court. So this is where the bulk of the work happens, and this is where we have to give a lot of support to the colleagues on the ground. And as indicated by the minister, the additional resources, to the extent that it may be required, will be placed at this level to ensure that the volumes that we have to manage are being appropriately managed. If I can move to slide number 9. Slide number 9 will just indicate, again, to emphasize that there's been much fewer cases since the 19th of July. And just to make the point that at the Durban Magistrates Court, normally there's 200 new cases on a Monday morning. This Monday, there were only 50 new cases that were received. We make the point that additional resources are not required at this stage from the prosecution's point of view. The AFU recovery process is aligned to the operational categories we've just spoken about. We are not going to talk too much about the asset forfeiture and recovery that we are busy with. The AFU has a coordinated approach with each DPP office and with the South African Police Services. And there's existing collaboration structures and nodal points and to overcome all the challenges or potential challenges. If we can move to page 11, and this is the final page, I think, on our slide, Chairperson and members of the committee. Pages 11 is just to show the impact of COVID since the beginning of the pandemic during March last year on the prosecution. And I think this, of course, will be a general trend throughout the justice system and particularly in our court environment. But if we can just focus for a moment on June 21 and July 21, and we will notice the dramatic increase during this period. This is the period, of course, of the third wave, and this is the period of the level 4 lockdown that we are currently in. So I think that this is a huge a number that of currently infected prosecutors, 123. And unfortunately, we also had one death during this period, unfortunately, one of our colleagues. So the chairperson and members of the committee, those are at a very high level, the plans that the MPA has put in place in collaboration with all our stakeholders, with the Department of Justice and with the police. To ensure that we are well-organized, well-positioned to respond to this crisis that has befallen the country. But we can all be rest assured that justice will prevail, as the NDPP has indicated, and we will do everything in our power to ensure that that all those who have been involved in these activities are brought to book. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Advocate de Kock. Please accept our condolences to the prosecutor who has passed on due to COVID-19, to yourselves and to the families of the prosecutor concerned. Please accept our heartfelt condolences. Members, that is the presentations. The overview of the minister, the overview of the NDPP, the presentation by NPA, then the Department of Justice. I have the following members: Honorable Horn, Honorable Swart, Honorable Newbold Drachens, Honorable Self, Honorable Jelle, Honorable Yako, in that order.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I have a very few questions so that we can try and get through all the presentations. Firstly, Chairperson, in respect of the statement by the NPA, with which I don't disagree with the statement, that they must maintain the principle of no case, no enrollment, I think it's important for us to ask the question of the 3,400 odd arrests, which according to the information available has been made, how many dockets have ultimately been brought to the NPA by the SAPS, and how many of those dockets have led to the enrollment of a case versus the number which has been referred back for further investigation. And I'm asking this specifically, Chair, because ultimately we know that perennially the NPA reports to us that the reason why on an annual basis the number of cases they enroll is due to police capacity. And I think in the current circumstances, a lot has been said around the fact that this is a crisis, and a crisis that also from a prosecution perspective has to be dealt with ultimately in order to sustain the rule of law in our country. And I think it is important for us to understand what is the current state of play as to how many of these arrests will lead to prosecution. Then the other question I wanted to ask, Chairperson, mindful of the fact that, as Mr. de Kock said, we are being afforded only a broad overview, and it is a difficult time in this country when one wants to balance the issues of accountability and transparency versus maintaining the effectiveness of ongoing investigations. I understand that. Nonetheless, I would want to ask specifically also in light of my previous question, what the current experience of the NPA is in respect of specifically those very complex investigations that has to unfold in respect of identifying the masterminds behind all of this, those who were busy probably on social media, with telephone conversations and with other electronic and virtual networks communicating with one another. And in that regard, I firstly want to ask whether the NPA has at all, after the Cyber Crimes Act became law only a month or two ago, and in the run-up to it becoming law, because we all knew it was coming, have capacitated prosecutors at the PCLU to specifically guide investigations based also on the complex and technical nature of that act, and secondly, whether from the NPA side they are satisfied that the SAPS in turn has done the necessary to build up that very specific capacity that was always going to be required by the technical elements of the Cyber Crimes Act, and whether that is in place in order to assist this important investigation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I can see members have got very nice backgrounds. Can you assist me? I would also like to have a very nice background after the meeting, Honorable Horn. Honorable Sort.
Thank you, Chairperson, and may I also express our condolences from our side on the loss of one of the prosecutors, and we pray for speedy recovery for all those that have been ill. Chairperson, you've asked for that we shouldn't have long preambles, but I do think that it's very important for us as the Justice Committee to express our deepest concern about the events, and I'm grateful for the calling of this meeting. I think for other portfolio committees to deal with the whole issue of crime intelligence and those possible deficiencies there, I think that is a separate issue. I think that it is very important for us, as has been indicated by the Minister and the NPA, to ensure that the Constitution and the rule of law is now protected. So I'm particularly encouraged by the firm stance that the NPA has taken, and Advocate Bertocchi and particularly Advocate Rodney de Kock, understanding the very seriousness of situation that we face and the commitment to prosecute those at level three, speaking about even sedition, high treason, and the Terrorism Act, as well as other acts that will be involved. So from my perspective, I think I'm concerned about the capacity of the investigations, and that to me is obviously something, Chair, we would need to maybe have a meeting with the Police Portfolio Committee as well. The NPA is reliant on the dockets, and we've seen challenges when it comes to prosecutions relating to state capture, corruption, I would like to ask the NPA whether they are satisfied with the capacity of the Hawks and the police to provide sufficient evidence and investigation so that these very serious matters can be speedily prosecuted. Chairperson, I'd like to secondly just ask about the security around from the department's perspective and the minister. We understand the various threats that have been made against the judiciary. These must be taken very seriously and to obviously no detail, but high level to what degree steps have been taken to protect our judiciary and the courts and the judges involved. Lastly, Chairperson, the issue of the backlogs. We have received the presentation from the department. We understand the challenges. We've been given the assurance that backlogs will be addressed. Could I ask whether additional courts would sit, additional hours would be found, maybe retired judges, retired magistrates will be brought in to deal with these very serious issues that we are faced with. Thank you from my side for the time being, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sartre. Honorable Nivot Trachan.
Thank you very much, Chair. And good morning to everybody on the platform. I would like to thank everyone for the presentations that have been made and would like to add my condolences to, sorry, I just need to fix the screen. I would like to add my condolences to the families and the colleagues of those who have passed away. In addition to what the members have already said, I would like to add my concern about what is happening across the country. I would like to know specifically in terms of social media, there are people who hide behind their laptops and their cell phones, and they are the ones who are really encouraging this sort of behavior. Who is monitoring that aspect? You know, the people who can, you know, we see the people looting on the TV screens. I mean, sorry, we watch our TVs and we see the people looting, but it's actually the people who can afford the laptops, afford the cell phones, who are inciting the people living in poverty in terms of looting. So how do we deal with both culprits in a sense? Yes, it is a crime to steal. If they are stealing, though, if poverty is an aspect in terms of their stealing, and those people affected by poverty would probably need legal aid, but I haven't, and we have heard so far that legal aid is overstretched, underfunded. So what assistance will be provided in terms of legal aid? I'm not sure if we haven't heard anything from legal aid so far, or about legal aid so far. In terms of COVID, I am concerned as well about the spread of the virus amongst the, you know, the judiciary and the justice system. The vaccination role, which is going in terms of age groups, I know Correctional Services is starting their vaccination campaign, but have our prosecutors and judiciaries been going to get vaccinated in terms of how it's rolled out, how the program is rolled out in terms of ages? And then because of the new remandees and the virus could spread possibly further in the Correctional Services centers, the NPA has mentioned the number of people infected in their organization. I would like to know, would there be more virtual cases or cases held virtually in terms to speed things up, or would that not be possible? From the Department of Justice, I would like to know if there was any damage done to the courts or the property within the past 2 weeks, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng, or was there no damage to property? And yes, those are my questions for now. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable James Self.
Thank you very much indeed, Chair. Thanks for the presentations. A couple of my questions have already been asked, but I'd like to think that the department and the NPA have put measures in place that are going to assist us deal with this crisis. But actually, we're facing crisis virtually every day. I mean, if you go into the prisons, you'll see vast numbers of awaiting trial detainees, and the backlog never really gets cleared. I'd like to know whether we can learn any lessons from this crisis that we will carry forward to deal with the backlogs and reduce the number of people in our awaiting trial facilities. The second question deals with what the NPA delicately called the fact that there were community and sectoral interventions that stopped the violence from spreading. Deconstructed, that means barricades and people who were manning them. Now, I'd like to know whether there's going to be any action taken against people who were legitimately saving their own lives and property, because in those circumstances, everything that I've heard is that the SAPs and to some extent the SANDF were unable to assist those communities when they were in crisis. And finally, from all the television footage that we saw, there was mass defiance of the COVID lockdown regulations. Is that going to enjoy any attention whatsoever by the NPA, or are we just going to regard that as something that is sort of inevitable under the circumstances? Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Honorable Jella.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning, colleagues, once again. Chairperson, can I not switch on my video? I don't think that it looks appropriate where I am right now. My background is really not nice. Thank you, Chairperson, if allowed. My first question, let me just thank the presenters for the presentation this morning, that they have just given us a lot of information in relation to what is happening now. And also, Chairperson, add my voice in saying what happened has really once again exposed us in so many things that some of them we were really aware that they are ticking bombs, you know, in our communities, especially in the township, Chairperson. But before that, Chairperson, we have been, as the leaders on the ground, we have been meeting with the stakeholders, the communities. The first message that I want to present here to the minister, in fact, it's the message from the very same community and the sectoral members that we have been meeting with in the communities. They are requesting, particularly in Katoras area. I know the minister went to Tembisa, but they are requesting in the Katoras, particularly in Fort Loras, they are requesting if maybe also the minister can visit them. There are some other things maybe they would want also to raise, even if they have raised them with us, but they would appreciate if the minister can also visit them. That is the message from those groups, the stakeholders, the ones that are assisting us in making sure that we are restoring peace in our communities, Chairperson. And then also another request, it's unfortunate, but we'll have to give it to Mr. de Kock, to take it also maybe to the committees where you meet in trying to resolve these matters. This one is particularly for the police, where the stakeholders in the communities are saying they are requesting that the minister must stop the issue of going house to house, taking food out of that community, because now it is causing problems for them. It seems as if some, they feel like there are others who are pointing them and all that. And now there has already been some few killings in relation to that, community fighting each other because of that. So that's the message from those groups also that I wanted to send to the minister and the team that is here today. And but also in relation to the questions, Chairperson, one question that I would want to ask our NPA is about the numbers. How many of these perpetrators are not South Africans, if any? If maybe we can be given with that statistics, so that we can be able to check and be able to differentiate in terms of coming to these perpetrators that we have in fact heard about today. Also, if I can ask a question, but differently from what Mr. Self or Honorable Self has just asked, it is believed that that which took place in Phoenix in particular, it must have been racially motivated. If possible, or if there is anything like that, because there is an outcry outside Chairperson that those people who were killed there, most of them, if not all, they were not involved in looting, in any crime. But we leave that to the NPA to investigate if there are plans towards that. Why were they killed? Why did, even if we are saying the community must protect themselves, but from the reports that we get is that there was no looting in that area. Nothing has been looted, and people who were just been killed there, some of them, they were going to get petrols for their cars, and some they were just passing along the way. Can the NPA maybe give us a briefing on that, and also give us a report if there are any arrests in relation to that matter? If not, why? And is there any investigation that is happening from the side of the MP?
Honorable Jada.
Yes,
don't you think that that question, we should maybe find ways and means of processing it via the Portfolio Committee of Police so that it can be asked to the police, not the NPA?
No, thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. I thought that Mr. de Kock said earlier they are meeting, they have a committee, a high-level committee where they meet with the police and talk about these things. So we can also take, in fact, take that route, but also if they can also assist us, because they are also involved in terms of the investigation. I'm not sure if maybe my motivation is in line with Chairperson, what we are hearing today. But in short, that's what I thought. Maybe they can also assist. Thank you, Chairperson. That was the last one.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yako.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation, and I appreciate the fact that this meeting has been brought forward so that we can discuss the unrest in KZN at the moment. And I also appreciate the fact that gender-based violence has been prioritized in the country as one of the key things that are being dealt with, whether we are under lockdown or not. In conjunction with that, many things are happening in South Africa at the same time. And I want to, because I think the previous speakers have spoken on a lot of issues that we would have liked to ask as a committee. However, as I said, many things are happening at the same time in South Africa, and there's a situation in Cape Town at the moment where there is incredible abuse on the rights of people, and there's testy violence. And I would like to ask the NPA or the Justice Department if they have engaged with the police as to what steps they're taking, because I know that we need to mitigate an issue where there will be a time where the Justice Department has to then intervene. But however, I'm not seeing an appetite from the police department at the moment to intervene right now in the unrest that is happening in Cape Town. So I would like to ask, in fact, I would like to appeal to the Justice Department to maybe approach the police department to see what they're doing. So if we're setting up regional representatives in different places like KZN at the moment, can we not then set up a regional structure that is going to deal with whatever is happening right now in terms of the taxi violence in Cape Town? Just so that people who are responsible for what is happening there can be held accountable. That is my only input at the moment, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yako. Honorable Dennis Bredenbach.
Hi, I'm sorry, I was having trouble unmuting. Good morning, everybody.
We're running away from Honorable Janji.
In his dreams.
That's the point.
My condolences to the NPA for the loss of their prosecutor, and I hope everyone who's ill gets well soon in all departments. I've largely been covered by my colleagues. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. What I do want to raise is that in discussions with
Honorable Bredenbach.
She's back on mute, Chair.
Oh, okay, there we go. Back on speaking.
Thank you.
I've formed a view that there is a distinct possibility that some of the KZN police could have possibly been complicit in what went on there, and that for that reason we should be concerned about them investigating themselves. Has the NPA factored this into investigations, and have there been thought given to police from other provinces doing this investigation work to avoid the obvious difficulties if they're investigating themselves? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think, Honorable Minister, maybe that question you might think about it and take it to the cluster. So that there is a cluster response to it. The issue that was raised by Honorable Bredenbach and the issue raised by Honorable Jelle. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe let's allow the NPA to start and then the department will come, because it seems most of the questions were directed to the NPA.
Yes, no, that's fine. I thought I must start with you because you can direct them as their leader. No, that's fine, Minister. NPA or DG? Who's starting?
Thanks, Chair. I can deal with two or three that were raised, one relating to the security of the courts and the judiciary.
We got a confirmation from the net joints that the members of the judiciary, those that have been identified and assessed to be at high risk, have been prioritized without mentioning the names, that they are being given the necessary protection. Insofar as our courts are concerned, as you will know, we utilize the services of private securities. They are on high alert, and there are regular meetings on a daily basis to check the state of security and their deployment. But also, the net joints has identified the courts as well as key national points that must be given their protections. We don't have a report of any building that might have been damaged or burned during the civil unrest. So yes, no court was affected to that extent of a damage. The vaccination of the judiciary, the Department of Health has made an arrangement. So the justice sector, that's the court officials and the judiciary, including the magistracy, legal aid and the NPA, have been classified as essential services. So from Monday, the officials can go to any vaccination site, as opposed to the other sectors. There was no specific arrangement because the numbers, we don't necessarily have high numbers that will have justified a specific setting up in court. So officials will have to go to any available site and get the vaccination. So what we have done, at least with the officials, the court officials, is that as they rotate in terms of level 4 regulations and the circulars that we have issued, they utilize the time that they are not at work to go and get vaccinated. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DJ, Honorable Advocate Skosana.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Just to indicate, DJ, you recall there was a slight damage to the Alexander Court, and the damage was not necessarily on the court itself, but I think there was the cables, electrical cables supplying the electricity court were cut, as well as the perimeter fence was brought down, and the motorcade machine was stolen and during that process, and those signs have been repaired. But as the DJ said, there was no damage specific to the court. But also to respond on two points which also have raised the issue of the backlog costs. Yes, which is Honorable Swart raised. Yes, I think through the integrated approach, there's a sense of looking into what are the various roles of the various courts entails, and to extend where there's been necessary to create spread roles. And I think there are measures in place to ensure that we draw in the capacity from retired magistrates and retired prosecutors, which will be done by the NPA, to deal with those matters. And I think also the process of ensuring that there are additional court sites where those matters can be dealt with. And I think the directions provide opportunities for that kind of an arrangement. And I think that's what's being coordinated at the higher level. And I think legal aid, there was a question on legal aid. Legal aid is part of the integrated team, as well as part of the regional teams. And so to extend that there are any support that legal aid requires, we are able to assist that, because we know that they've got a very, very limited footprint around there. Those are the two questions Honorable Chair wanted to allude to, which have been raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Deputy Minister John Jeffrey.
Chair, thanks. No, I just wanted, maybe before the NPA come in, the issue of more courts and longer hours, as was asked. I mean, our current problem is our courts are not sitting anywhere close to the 4.5 hours that is the norm set by the Chief Justice. So I think the key thing is we've got to ensure that they actually sit more. Look, obviously things have been made more complicated with COVID. Before we start looking at more courts and longer hours. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. National Director of Public Prosecution.
Chairperson, it's Anton Dupuisier, Deputy National Director. I'm seeing my colleague, Advocate de Kock, will continue. I've just got confirmation that the NDPP's connection went out due to a power failure. She is trying to reconnect. So perhaps we can start with Advocate de Kock, and then the National Director will come in very shortly. Thank you.
Okay, that's fine. Advocate de Kock.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Please assist me if I miss out any of the questions.
So just to let colleagues that I am back in. Thank you very much. Please go ahead, Advocate Kock.
Okay. Thank you. The first question from Honorable Warren, relating to the number of arrests that are made by the police, the number of dockets that are referred to prosecutors, and the correlation between the enrollment of cases. We do identify currently a gap between the number of arrests and the number of dockets that are received. Let us bear in mind that one docket may have more than one accused. So it's a very difficult equation to do without going to the individual dockets. Checking how many accused were arrested on a particular individual docket, and then understanding how many of those accused, or if any, were then subsequently charged. So we don't have that information currently, but it is an issue that we have flagged to our work streams. As I've indicated, they do meet on a daily basis, and we've asked that we get synergy between the numbers. So currently, Chair, we are working on that, but it is a difficult exercise because you basically have to go to individual dockets to understand and to answer the question. Perhaps with your permission, we will do our best to try and get the answer. And then if necessary, that could be provided to you in writing. The second issue related to social media and the question of the Cyber Crimes Act. Now, the Cyber Crimes Act have been implemented in relation to only certain of the provisions. Currently, in relation to statistics, the MPA is organizing itself around providing statistical information. What we have also done through our specialized commercial crimes unit is that we've developed the training programs, both for prosecutors and for investigators. And currently, as we speak, the training between ourselves, the SAFs, will take place around the new provisions of the Act. But let us bear in mind that those provisions are still not all implemented, and the regulations, of course, also still needs to be promulgated. But the MPA is well in advance in terms of developing the training program and the training material that is going to be relevant to training in this particular area. The next question related to Honorable Swartz. He asked a question regarding the capacity of the police, the DPCI, to do the work. Now, what we have done is we have categorized, as I've indicated, by way of priority, the nature of the offenses. And so when you look at the breakdown of the numbers of the so-called complex, high-profile, serious cases, and those matters that we categorize as level one and two, you will find that there is sufficient capacity within the DPCI in particular, to investigate those matters. So those cases are being investigated by the DPCI, and some of them are being investigated by the Crimes Against the State unit within the DPCI as well. And then, as I've indicated, we've allocated prosecutors from our organized crime components who work in a collaborative way on a prosecutor-guided model where prosecutors are all involved in terms of assisting the investigators to solve those matters. So we are satisfied that that there are sufficient capacity to be able to do the work, and we are meeting also in that category on a daily basis nationally with the DPCI to understand progress in those investigations. These are ongoing investigations that are happening as we speak. So we have not been alerted to any particular resourcing constraints at this point in time. We satisfied there's sufficient capacity for us to be able to do that work. The next question came from Honorable Dragan, who asked about the social media and those individuals who hide behind laptops and then create a lot of damage. Yes, our intelligence agencies would have the mandate to do these kind of monitoring and investigation. Of course, there are also legal provisions that must be complied with. The prosecution, unfortunately, does not have those powers. And some of those powers are placed within the crime intelligence mandate of the South African Police Services. So there are mandates for us to be able to do this work in other agencies other than the prosecution. But I make the point also that this is not just an open-ended affair. It is subject to the law still, because ultimately whatever we obtain, we must obtain lawfully, so that if we feel that offences have been committed, we're able to utilise that evidence for the purposes of court cases. I think also just on the point of the vaccination, to add to what the DG and Advocate Skosana has mentioned, the prosecution, I'm sure the NDPP may want to emphasise this, has also made a lot of effort to ensure that our prosecutors are prioritized for vaccination. We believe the prosecutors are frontline workers that must be protected. And so with the Department of Health, all the prosecutors, MPA officials have also been enrolled for prioritization on the vaccination program. And hopefully within the next week or two, we will start also with the vaccination program for prosecutors and other court staff, because we need to deal with the court holistically, because all of us are exposed to the same virus in the court environment. The next question came from Mr. Self and Honorable Jele, Honorable Self and Honorable Jele. I think there's the two questions that are sort of interrelated. Mr. Self spoke about communities who protected themselves and whether or not they'll be prosecuted. And Honorable Jela raised a particular matter in KZN, incidents in KZN. Relating to community response. So I think that as the prosecution, we have agreed that we cannot speak too much about investigations and individual investigations. I think that ultimately we must ensure that matters must be investigated thoroughly. Evidence must be collected by the police as speedily and effectively as possible. And the role of the prosecutor or the prosecution is to adjudicate and evaluate evidence and then make decisions about whether or not any crimes were committed. If we identify that crimes were committed, irrespective of who the individuals are, prosecutions must follow. That is what the law demands. So we don't have the luxury of picking our cases. If the cases justify prosecution, then we are subject to the law and we are subject to our own policies to ensure that prosecutions happen. So I think my answer is going to be that each case must be evaluated on its own merits and its own facts, and the facts will determine the decisions that prosecutors make on the ground. Of course, let us bear in mind that when a decision is made by a prosecutor at a local level, we do have mechanisms of checks and balances. So if a prosecutor in a particular court, let's say Durban, makes a decision not to enroll a case, we have mechanisms to ensure that if anyone is unhappy about that particular decision, that we can ask for a review as first instance to the director of public prosecutions of that particular division. And if there's still not a satisfaction, that the review can come to the national office and to the NDPP. So I think the point I'm making is the MPA will strive at all times to ensure that we look at matters objectively and that we ensure that we approach all matters in a balanced way and in a way that is in the interest of justice, ultimately, for the victims and for the perpetrators of those matters. That's the one question. I think, Mr. Self, if there was something else, please remind me. And Honorable Jele, I think you also asked about the foreign perpetrators. Unfortunately, we don't have that information readily available at the moment. And so that may be a question that we may have to come back to you to respond to on that particular question. On the last question by Honorable Jaco, we were asked whether or not similar structures that we have put in place in relation to KZN and Gauteng could be put in place in relation to the current taxi violence in Cape Town. And the answer to that question is yes, that must be put in place, and it is put in place, where through the provincial joints of the province, there is a priority committee, and this is a long-standing priority committee in Cape Town that is supposed to address taxi violence. Now, this priority committee is a priority committee of the joint structure of the Western Cape, and this priority committee will involve the Department of Transport, the Provincial Department of Transport, the City of Cape Town, and all other relevant departments that needs to address taxi violence in its different facets, the underlying causes of taxi violence. And so, of course, the aspects relating to where people are killed and where offences are committed are also dealt with as a focus area. So we will engage with the Acting Director of Public Prosecutions just to ensure that that work is being done as it should be done and that those matters are also receiving priority attention as we speak. So NDPP, I think those are the ones that I thought I could cover. If there's anything further, then maybe you could come in. Thank you very much.
Before Advocate Patoy, I think we would need to urgently get that information on the foreign nationals as soon as you get it. I think it will be important that you respond to us in writing because we think it is very important that we should have that information, so that we can see the extent to which they have been involved in this looting and the involvement of foreign nationals.
Thank you, Chair. We will do that.
Thank you very much. Over to you, National Director of Public Prosecutions.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just on the last aspect, I think this highlights the importance of us having our integrated justice system really functional in a way that meets the needs of what the kind of data we need, because collecting data such as the number of foreign nationals in courts is really something that should be collected within the court system from the information that's present, because it just places an added responsibility on the NPA to collate this kind of data when we really have to deal with prosecutions and working with SAFs to get the cases to courts. So it's really important that there are these systems in place that can collate this information and give that kind of information to the committee. So I highlight that I'm not sure how easy this will be for the NPA to actually do, but we will certainly, with our justice counterparts, see what can be done in that regard, Chair, to assist. Chair, just wanted to maybe just on the issue of the cybercrime. This is really important question. And to be brutally frank, we really, in as much as the NPA has identified this as a key area to develop capacity and expertise, and we've certainly put in place, as Advocate Cox said, certain mechanisms to deal with this. And I'll ask Advocate Duplessis, who's the head of Strategy Operations Compliance, under whom the HR and the training component resides, to quickly talk through that. But it is really an important issue, and I am concerned about the speed with which law enforcement is actually getting on top of having that real cutting edge capacity and capability that we need to properly address these crimes. So I'm just going to ask Ed to come back on a couple of other issues. Anton?
Thank you, NDPP, and good morning, honourable members and colleagues. This is a vitally important point, and thanks to the honourable member for raising it. And as Advocate de Kock says, we have a number of training initiatives and capacity building initiatives in place to make sure that we're up to date with the latest developments. But the one area where I think we do need significant ramping up, not only within the NPA, but with also with our partners within the police in particular, is around our ability to respond to the current threat from cybercrime, but also the future threat. This is going to, in my view and in our view, outpace in many ways the ability of the law enforcement and criminal justice responses. And it's something which we need to look at with a real eye on innovation. We need to look at how we can bring in experts from the private sector to support, the most appropriate ways. Look at collaboration with our international partners. But with the new law that the honourable member referred to, this is probably one of the areas where I think the NPA, together with its partners, really is going to have to invest. We have a program in place which we will update members on in due course, but it is something that has unfortunately been delayed a little bit by COVID and our inability to implement some of the plans we had, but certainly in the months ahead and within next year, it will be a priority that we'll report back to this committee on in terms of the progress we're making and in terms of the collaboration that we bring into this process, because it's no point in just developing our capacity. We also need to develop and support the initiatives of our partners, and not only within South Africa, but this is important that we look at a regional approach so that we look at the capacity development of our counterparts within the region, because as you know, many of these crimes committed are not necessarily committed within one country, but across multiple jurisdictions. So this is a highly complex matter that requires additional attention. So thank you for raising it. Over to you, NDPP.
Thank you, Anton. Honourable Chair, there were a couple of questions that were asked. Honourable Swart, and sorry if I don't have the names of all the members, raised the question about whether we were satisfied about the capacity in the DPCI and SAPS to deal with this. And it's really important that this is raised, because prosecutions can only be as effective as really good investigations. And the reality is that our law enforcement investigative capacity, for various reasons, has been wanting. And we've had meetings with General Labia, particularly in the DPCI, because looking at the higher level perpetrators requires, for us to really put together the best skills we have. And I am also aware of the challenges that are in the DPCI. So Advocate Dr. General Labia has indicated that they are putting together, you know, the necessary capacity and capabilities. But I really hope that we have them, because I still am concerned that, you know, we may not really be have you know the available skills to deal with this in the way and with the speed with which we need to respond. So it is a challenge, but I know there is certainly a commitment from General Labia to get the work done and speedily. So hopefully that will we'll be able to demonstrate with good prosecutions that is the case. But this is a serious issue and is a matter that you know is certainly of concern. The I suppose linked to that in some way is the issue that Honorable Breitenbach raised about members of law enforcement being complicit, and this could be across law enforcement. So I think in that regard, there needs to be processes in place to ensure that those that are dealing with this in regrettably a highly politicized environment could also be compromised. And there needs to be ways in which our, you know, the authorities are able to flesh out, you know, those that may be compromised and make sure that those dealing with these matters are really those that can be trusted to be truly objective. And then it leads me to another point of the importance of the NPA not getting involved in politicized or factional battles. We really need to hold the line on independence. And as Advocate de Kock said, to look at the evidence and then to decide on prosecutions in a dispassionate way, so that we prosecute no matter who is implicated at the end of the evidence. So we really trying very hard to stay out of all of these factional battles and very politicized environments, so that we can do our work. And we would really appreciate it if colleagues understand the importance of us not getting involved in dealing with the root causes of these problems. There must be other parts of the government that should be looking at those issues and assisting us in dealing with our work in a very objective and dispassionate way. Chair, there were one or two other matters I just want to quickly look at and make sure that I cover all of them. Before I go to the vaccination rollout, Chair, on the issue of the I think it is the vaccination rollout that I can talk about very quickly. The prosecutors now, from yesterday, we are now on a different track. So all prosecutors, well, members of the NPA, are now on as part of the vaccination program, and we've certainly encouraged staff members to make sure that they do take the vaccination. And if they don't, then there's a process in that regard if they choose not to. Colleagues, Chair, I think that is the we've dealt with all of the issues. If there's anything we've left out, we'd be happy to be reminded.
NDPP, there's one question. I think there's one question. It was about the lessons learnt. There was a question. I'm not sure which colleague, which member, honourable member.
Honourable self talked. Yes, it was about the awaiting child detainees.
Yes, and yes. The lessons learned. So I think the answer. Can I just take that question? Yes, I think the answer is that we have learned many lessons in terms of how to approach the question of backlog since the whole. Pandemic started and currently in the current environment. And so if we look at the minister's directives, and particularly the section dealing with criminal cases and related matters, the first point is the audiovisual link, the postponement of cases, dealing with cases through the audiovisual link. And then we also, in relation to the current unrest cases, the minister has issued a directive that the court, in its discretion, could also use any virtual platform that is authorized by the presiding officer. And that, of course, audiovisual links could also be used for the purposes of bail applications. So I think that that is the fundamental lesson that I think we are learning throughout the system. And in line with the modernization of the system, we hope that as we go forward, that more of our cases could be used through this technology, and that, that we can then speed things up. And so we really need to make all efforts to ensure that our cases can be done by the use of technology for the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Those are the responses. If we have omitted anything, we'd be happy to be reminded. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, NTPP and Advocate Tukok. Mm-hmm. Members, is there any member whose question has not been answered? None. Can you go to the Minister?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the one that could have been directed to me is the one related to the stakeholder engagement in FOSNU. We will continue to engage with the stakeholders across the country, and also when the situation permits, we will find a way to engage with the stakeholders that the Honourable Member has referred to. With regards to the question for foreign nationals that have been arrested, charged, or in our centres, I think correctional services will be able to break that down for you, Honourable Chairperson, when they present the number of inmates that they have. Hopefully, maybe it could be integrated with the information the NPA has in terms of the number of foreign nationals, because they do have that breakdown. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. Can we now let's allow the Correctional Services, the Department of Correctional Services, to present? I'm not sure whether the Deputy Minister would want to lead or the Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll allow Mr. Mbambo to present.
Minister, I think the DM wanted to say something. He is using an iPhone.
Okay.
I wanted to say the same thing that the Minister has just said.
Okay.
That Mr. Eat.
Okay. That's fine. Mr. Mbambo?
Thank you. Good day, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and Honorable Members. Honorable Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, our Deputy Ministers, DG and Director of Public Prosecutions and the colleagues. The DCS presentation should not be seen in isolation. As the Minister indicated, that we also form part and parcel of the team that is led by Advocate Skhosana. So we'll just highlight key things that are actually affecting DCS due to the unrest that have just taken place, you know, in our country. I think it is important to note that, as we all know, that the Department of Correctional Services has always been characterized by the challenge of overcrowding in our facilities, and that is affecting our bed space negatively. And we have had some court judgments and rulings on that, that there is a particular threshold that we shouldn't exceed. And human rights bodies are also on our case. And we also need to observe the standard minimum rules on treatment of inmates globally, the Mandela rules. With the recent developments that have taken place, that has exacerbated the problem that we are faced with. I'm referring to the influx, Honorable Chairperson and members, of the new inmates that we received, particularly in the KZN region as well as Gauteng. That has got a big impact on our infrastructure as the department. As you might have seen, the recent developments at Umzinto, where the inmates, about 193 inmates, they touched the facility. And they also banned our logistics division. And fortunately, we didn't have any escapes due to the partnership that we have with SAPS. But the reality is that the facility now is damaged, and 191 inmates, we had to transfer them to Westville because two of them lost their lives during the process of this riot or uprising because they wanted to escape. There was going to be a mass escape there. So that's a damage to property of the state because that includes the vehicles and a whole range of things in that facility. So we lost the bed space there of about 200. Now we had to transfer people to Westville, and that has created a big challenge of overcrowding. So I'm trying to demonstrate the problem of infrastructure. The issue of unintended consequences that have been done by this is during this period, you recall that, you know, some of these people are not necessarily people that are involved on a, what you call it, criminal activities. Now they are with the hardened criminals. And it's an opportunity for gang members to initiate these people there, and we have a problem of gangsterism being brewed in that environment. And the issue of assaults is going to go up. I've already mentioned the issue of escapes. And also, it is important for members to take note that this may also result on issues of unnatural deaths in our facilities. And it is also important to note that, Honorable Chairperson and members, that once these facilities are overcrowded, we are also expected to observe the issue of COVID-19, then issues of separating people when we admit them becomes a challenge for us as the department. And yet we are expected also to deliver on our mandate as the department. When our colleagues were presenting, the issues of capacity were raised. So DCS is squarely affected by issues of capacity insofar as this influx of people is concerned, because when NPA was presenting, they indicated that they are well organized, they are well positioned to execute their work. After those people have been found guilty, they will be landing onto our facilities. So it is important to take note of the issue of capacity for DCS, the resources. We had serious budget cuts as a department. And also we had the issue of the posts that were cut insofar as our work is concerned. So with this unexpected unrest that took place in our country, that is putting the department in a very awkward position in terms of the execution of its mandate. Notwithstanding the fact that we are not coping, we are trying under the circumstances of the department. Our minister has given direction in terms of the numbers of our new remandees. The figures are fluctuating because they are trickling in. Like KZN is beginning to pick up now. People are being arrested. Initially, it was Gauteng that was leading. Currently, as of yesterday, we have about 1,959 people that have been arrested, and foreign nationals are 69. That constitute 3.5% of the foreign nationals within the facilities of DCS. I'm not going to waste time, as I indicated that Advocate Mashibini is serving in the task team with the one that is headed by Advocate Skosana. He will just highlight a few specifics insofar as our environment is concerned, Chairperson, but he's not going to go slide by slide because the presentation was sent through to the committee members. It's only 15 slides, but I think he will be able to skim through those slides and just zoom on issues that are quite critical for the purpose of this engagement, and also to allow more time for the engagement and questions that honorable members would want to put forward or across to the department. Through your permission, Chair, I would request Advocate Mashibini. He is the person responsible for remand detainees nationally. He's the branch head for that. I'll afford him an opportunity to take us through the specifics, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I proceed, Advocate Mashibini.
Thank you very much, COC. The Honorable Minister and the Deputy Ministers, the members of the Portfolio Committee, our colleagues in the sister departments, greetings. Firstly, I want to also convey our condolences to the member who had passed in the department, in the public, in the NDPP, and we wish to extend our prayers to the family. Chairperson, I think the COC has basically summarized what I'm going to present here. And I would request the person who's controlling the slides to go to slide number 3, so that, because here it's basically just about the table of contents of what the presentation is all about. Next slide, please. The next one, after this. So as it was indicated already, Chairperson, that we are presenting to you, and also to indicate that we are still adhering to our legal mandates, as it can be seen there, the different legal frameworks that are being applied in the remand detention management, your Section 35 of the Constitution, which emphasizes the provision of conditions of detention that are consistent with human dignity, in as far as provision at state expense of adequate accommodation, nutrition, reading material and medical treatment, your Correctional Services Act, especially Chapter 5 of the amended part of the Act, which also emphasized the management, safe custody, and the well-being of remand detainees by providing them also clothing, food, and drink, as well as uniform. The Child Justice Act, which also provide for the procedure that are in place to ensure that children are being separated from adults. Next slide. I think the next slide, Chairperson, is about the criminal procedure also, where emphasis is placed on Section 58 with regard to audiovisual link that we are also using in our centers, and also the types of awaiting trial detainees that are being provided for in our white paper on corrections, such as those who have been granted bail but cannot afford to pay it, those who have been denied bail, as well as children in detention. Next slide. I think we can pass the next slide, because basically, okay, the COC has spoken about it to emphasize the fact that we are engulfed by this situation in the country, where we have an increase of remand detainees in our facilities, and we are required as a department to ensure that while we are admitting this mass influx of additional detainees, we must still be able to manage our overcrowding strategy, which strategy has really over the past been bringing fruits and changes in our centers. But as it is standing currently, this situation of this mass influx, it is bringing unintended consequences, as the COC has said. And the important thing also about the problem that we are having is because we are dealing with a fluid population of remand detainees, whereas it is indicated also by the Honorable Minister that our numbers are increasing on a daily basis. The presentation that we are presenting to you, you would see that it was as on the 19th of this month, where we had a total of about 1,600, and as it was indicated that yesterday it has increased to 1,900. So we are dealing with a fluid population, Chairperson, that needs us to be always managing it. The next slide is about just to indicate the analysis in as far as the trends are concerned. Next slide, please. Where one would see that it is actually showing our average population of inmates from last year in March up until the end of the financial year, where we would see that around that period of March last year, we had 50,000 remand detainees. It increased to 53,000 during June, possibly due to COVID, and then it later moved down up until the end of the financial year, where it decreased to 47,820. The next slide is just to show a comparative analysis of this RD in as far as accommodation is concerned from May to July this year, where one would also be able to see, next slide, one would be able to see that, for an example, nationally in June we had, in May we had a total of 46,000 remandees, and by the 13th of July we had 44,192, which was a reduction of 1,886. And for both Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal region, the same can also be said that during May this year, they had a total of 13,169, which decreased by 325 at the end, on the 13th of July. And KwaZulu-Natal had a total of 5,684, which reduced by 141 to 5,513 by the 13th of July. The next slide, Chairperson, shows the total number, as I've indicated, of this remand detainees as on the 19th of July. One would also see that in that particular slide that we do have a Boksburg Management Area, Johannesburg, Medium B, Kgosimampuru, Krugersdorp, and Moda B, where this remand detainees are held. One would see that we have 125 for Boksburg, 884 for Johannesburg, 73 for Kgosimampuru, 40 for Krugersdorp, 166 for Moda B, which came to a total of 1,288. 38 of these 1,888 are foreign nationals. And then for KwaZulu-Natal, we also have different institutions there, Durban, Glencoe, Mpangeni, and Pietermaritzburg, where in Durban we have 264, 53 for Glencoe, Mpangeni 5, Pietermaritzburg 77, coming to a total of 399. And out of that 399, 26 of them are foreign nationals. Now, when you add both these totals from Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal, they culminate to a total of 1,687 as on the 19th. But as we have had, Chairperson, as of yesterday, the lockup came to 1,900. The next slide, Chairperson, is basically a breakdown in terms of this accommodation of this remand detainees, where, for an example, when you look at the KZN, you'd be able to see that on your first column, it is a column for the females, juveniles, between the ages 18 to 20. We've got three of them. And then the next column is juveniles, males, 18 to 20. We've got about 29 of them. And then the third column is about youth and adults from 21 years and older. Here it's females, we've got 74 of them. And the last column there is about the youth and adults 21 years and older who are males, we've got about 293. The breakdown there is basically showing in terms of the different institutions as to the ones that we have already provided to you. And this comes to a total of 399 that was held on the 19th of July in KZN. The next slide, Chairperson, is about Gauteng region. Also there, it's a breakdown in terms of the different categories of these remandees, where you see that we've got 23 for the juveniles between the age of 18 to 21 males. We've got 394 females in the same category. One can see that 377 of them are in Johannesburg female, and 17 of them are at Kgosimampuru female. We have a total of 871 of the youth and adults between the age of 21 and above, culminating to a total of 1,288 for Gauteng region. The next slide, Chairperson, it is about the impact that these admissions have on our remand detainees programs. Here, specific emphasis is on the different programs that we have in as far as our legislative and mandatory requirements are concerned. For an example, if you look at the provision of uniform, it is clear that we will have to still provide the uniform to these remandees as and when we admit them to the centers, which is actually having a bearing on our budget. We have to provide food due to the increased ration because of the numbers that we are admitting. Most importantly, Chairperson, on the COVID-19 infections, as the COC has emphasized, that we risk a possible super spreader in these particular institutions. I need to immediately indicate that as a department, we do have protocols, COVID-19 protocols in place, where amongst others, we conduct screening upon admission of these RDs for 2 weeks before they could be sent to the general population. And then should it happen that we have cases which are positive, they are then isolated and they are kept away from the rest of the population. There is also here a need for a procurement of additional quarantine or isolation sites, as well as PPEs. The other important aspect on this impact, Chairperson, is around the bed space or the overcrowding. Because if one, for an example, has to look at a blow-by-blow presentation in terms of the overcrowding in these different centers where these remandees are held, one would realize that, for an example, in Johannesburg, medium A, we have an overcrowding percentage of 220, meaning that we have already exceeded the threshold that was set in the Sonke Gender Justice case. This is the president of RSA, in which the presiding chair had indicated that it is important that the department should restrict itself within the 150 threshold. For Kgosimampuru, we are at 125%, Krugersdorp 182%, Modder B 271%, for Durban we are at around 130%, Glencoe 119%, Empangeni 111%, and Pietermaritzburg 162%. So clearly, Chairperson, these are indicating that while we are grappling with this problem of the admission of these remandees, but we are still, on the other hand, increasing our numbers in as far as the population is concerned. And this is a serious bearing on our threshold, especially in as far as this particular case that I've cited is concerned. The next slide, Chairperson, is basically also around the impact of public violence on our resources. I mean, public violence and unrest of these remand detainees on our resources. as I've indicated, with regard to medical costs, clearly, Chairperson, they are going to increase because it is common knowledge that the department is responsible for the medical costs of all these remandees unless they chose to have their own private medical treatment. With regard to overtime, it is also the situation that we are faced with, Chairperson, because currently we are short-staffed as the department, and as a result, we are forced to book members to do overtime, and that is a serious pressure on our compensation budget. There's a need for more PPEs as a result of the admission of these remand detainees, as I've indicated. Our staff to inmate ratio, Chairperson, is really, really way away from the acceptable norm of 1:5. 1:5 in terms of one staff officer against inmates. Currently, as I'm indicating, it is way above 1:35, which totally means that the department will have to recruit more officials in order to bring about balance to this standard. The increasing security-related activities, Chairperson, as indicated by the COC, they've got the potential to increase. We have the risk of escapes that we foresee, especially from these remandees, because most of them, you know, because of the fact that they've been taken out there and been admitted to our centers, they still have this fear of the center. You know, we have a potential risk of the increase of unnatural deaths, the assaults, as well as gang activities amongst the offenders themselves. The educational programs for the youth, Chairperson, it is our responsibility as a department to take them over, especially to those youth who have been in the schools at the time of their admission to our centers. The next slide, Chairperson, is basically to add on what I think NDPP has indicated with regards to the availability of AVR in our courts in those affected areas. We have a total of 8 correctional centers which are linked to 26 courts in both regions, as I will show in the next slide. The importance of this is basically that it assists to a great extent to reduce the movement of remand detainees between the detention center and the court. The next slide, Chairperson, is basically showing this availability of these AVRs in our courts, which are connected to our correctional centers. As you can see there in Gauteng, Boksburg, we have Boksburg, AVR courts, Boksburg, Jamestown, Palm Ridge, which are linked to the Boksburg Correctional Center, Kgosimampuru, Pretoria Central, Themba, Garankuwa, Pretoria North, Johannesburg Medium A, linked to Johannesburg, Orlando, Hillbrow, Randburg, Wynberg, and Soweto, Krugersdorp, and Roodepoort. Moda B is linked to Benoni, Kempton Park, and Tembisa. Regarding KwaZulu-Natal, the AVR courts there, we've got Ladysmith and Lenco, which are linked to Ladysmith. Pietermaritzburg, linked to Pietermaritzburg Correctional Center. And in Durban Medium A, we've got Durban, Pinetown, Verulam, Umlazi, and Stenga, which are all linked to Durban Medium Center in KwaZulu-Natal. In conclusion, Chairperson, in the next slide, we need to indicate that despite the fact the challenges that are being brought to us as a department in as far as this unplanned influx of remand detainees is concerned, the department is doing all that is possible to contain these challenges which are brought about by these admissions in our correctional centers. All the rights of our remandees as provided for in various legislative frameworks are applied and implemented accordingly, despite these challenges. The regions are strictly continuing to apply the COVID-19 protocols on every admission process, which is taking place in the different centers. It is also essential to note that the departmental budget is highly overstretched beyond the limit due to the impact of these admissions. And for that reason, the department will have to reprioritize its critical needs and also approach National Treasury, probably with your recommendation, members of the Portfolio Committee, to consider augmenting the allocated budget accordingly due to these unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditures. And with that, I thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir, for your presentation. Deputy Minister, do you want to say something?
So that Chairperson, members, don't think I don't want to speak. I'll just emphasize the point that has been made by the acting DOC as well as Advocate Zini, which basically is that we need to appreciate the fact that in spite of the fact that we have had to reprioritize our budget allocations, we now are required once again to reprioritize, as Mashabin has just indicated, showing the enormity of the task that is in our hands. So we shall need the support here and advices and guidance as usual of the portfolio committee. Again, the other point that needs to be emphasized, which is in our hands really, is the one that has already been undertaken by the integrated task team to which Mr. Mashabini belongs. The need for a coordinated approach in terms of what we do as the various members, the components of the JCBS, because the success of the two others, the police, the court, or the prosecution, the court, results in the overwhelming of our sentence by numbers that tend to be sentenced for incarceration, which means then that we need to work together in looking at the alternate ways of sentencing, as well as restorative justice measures to minimize the number of people that get into our centers. Already broken the law as decreed by the court by breaching the threshold that has been set by the courts in terms of overcrowding. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. I have the following members, Honorable Hendricks, Honorable Self, Honorable Nieuwoud Drachens, in that order.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I have connection problems, so please excuse me. Honorable Chair, it looks like we are heading for a failed prison system because of budgetary constraints. Having said that, I have visited the quarantine centers at a prison. I know what's happening there. With these numbers, these quarantine facilities at our prisons will soon be interpreted as being concentration camps. And that's why we need a strategy, and I hope the minister will speak to his counterpart, but he must put it in writing, suggesting that before they are sent to our prisons, that some of the ideas that the Minister of Justice and Prisons has needs to be implemented at police station level. So when the Minister of Justice speaks about restorative justice and he speaks about plea bargains, you know, it will help if that can be done at police station level. I don't know how practical that is before people are sent to prisons, and we know that the prisons cannot accommodate them. I think the Minister of Justice has given the nation leadership in their dealing with what we are faced with now, restorative justice, plea bargains. You know, should be, I know people want their pound of flesh, but that is the direction that we should move in. We've heard that many of those that are now in prisons are not hardened criminals, but they can become so. So it will help the nation if we can prevent them from becoming hardened principals. And maybe we must look at preventing as many of those arrested actually going to prison facilities, but the issue is that their release is considered at police station levels much more easily now. It's very easy just to bundle them into a van and take them to a prison. Our police stations need to help the nation in trying to resolve this issue. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hendricks. Honorable James Self.
Thank you very much, Chair. Ms. Mbambo referred to the problems in Umzinta prison and the unrest that took place there. I certainly saw that on social media, and it seemed to me that some of those inmates were just jumping off the walls. Would that indicate a lack of preparedness for a fire? Secondly, I'd like to know whether there was any other incidents of unrest in any of the correctional centres anywhere in South Africa, but particularly in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng. And thirdly, I'd like to know whether there's going to be an inquiry into Umzinta, and if so, has it started yet? And what sort of consequence management will there be for the people involved? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Newport Drachens.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you to the department for their presentations. I don't want to repeat what the department has already said about the implications on the staff and medical costs, PPEs, nutrition provided for the extra remand detainees. And I understand about the reprioritization and the communication or them approaching National Treasury. I would like to ask, however, has the department already communicated with National Treasury? Is there any kind of update or any kind of indication that National Treasury will be willing to augment the budget, particularly for the two regions, in order to, you know, provide the resources that are required, as already mentioned in the presentation, nutrition, et cetera. So the fact that the department is already overstretched. So in relation to that, is the department still going to speak to National Treasury, or have you already approached National Treasury? Then in terms of restorative justice, it will require the staff, it will require staff to assist, and will you have adequate people or personnel to assist with the restorative justice process? Specifically in Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maseko Jela.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and also thank you to Mr. Zigarala. Chairperson, I only have one question. It's in relation with, it has been reported that there's shortage of uniform, and because of the situation that we have now, indeed the department is bound to have serious constraints when it comes to the issues of budget. But previously in our meetings, Chairperson, at some point we discussed that we require from the department a new innovative approach or strategy when it comes to dealing with these issues, particularly on making sure that the department is able to assist itself and also assist us, because we are having those inmates that we are training them, skilling them, preparing them for life outside a prison. I just want to find out, Chairperson, if maybe how far have the department is when it comes to that thinking in terms of making sure that we have new innovatives. This situation is not going to end today, huh? And looking at the current situation that we have now, it tells you that we don't have money. The country doesn't have money. We need people who have to assist us to come with new innovatives. So how far is the department with it, if maybe one may ask? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jala. Just to add on what you have said, there is no money, but on the other hand, we don't see proper management of resources by the department. But I think that one, we are going to come back to it when you come for the annual performance plans. Because as much as you must be asking for more resources, but use the resources that you have been given properly. You are not making your case any easier when there is high irregular expenditure, wasteful expenditure. So as much as we understand the fact that you need more resources, but those that you have been given, use it sparingly and use it efficiently. Over to you, department or minister, do you want to add, do you want to lead on the responses?
No, the department can lead, can proceed, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. Mr. Mbambo.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Minister and members of the committee and the Deputy Minister. I'm with the colleagues on the platform. Mr. Mashipini, as he has already presented, there are also other colleagues. But I just want to respond to the question that was posed by Honorable Member Self regarding the Mzinto incident. Yes, there is an investigation that is currently underway. We have appointed a multidisciplinary team that will focus on a number of issues, on issues of HR as well as security issues, since it is a security incident that took place there. Indeed, we have established, without getting into the details of the matter, that it was a planned thing, you know, because when we interviewed the inmates that were involved in this incident, we managed to identify the instigator, for the lack of the better word, the ringleader. You know, there are six cells that are there. So this whole thing started in cell number one. So it's where the whole thing was planned. And I don't want to go to the details because we are busy with the investigation, but we have made some inroads there. We are going to work with SAPS because already there's a person that has indicated that he is the one who started this, is not hiding that. And also other inmates in cell one have confirmed that. And there are clues that he's not operating in isolation, he's operating with people outside. He, you know, it's linked to the former president's, what you call incarceration. The matter of partnership with the police was quite useful in this exercise. It's important to note that our officials were attacked by these inmates unexpectedly as they were serving them food or lunch. They stormed the facility, but fortunately, SAPS responded because they couldn't use their cars because the roads were barricaded and there was a lot of problems in KZN. They used their chopper. That helped a lot because we managed to contain the situation. and together with our officials and SAPs. So I don't know, I think the investigation will be shared, the outcomes of that. We can't preempt what will be the outcome of the investigation, but suffice to say, at least there are clues in terms of this, what triggered this whole problem there. On issues of restorative justice, I'm going to request the advocate Mashibin to touch on that. But what I want to stress on the issue of resources, particularly at custodial level, at an operational level, that we want to be, our approach, even in our strategic plan, we want to be center-centric in our approach to ensure that we strengthen capacity at that level. In terms of the ratios, as Mr. Mashibin indicated, there is a challenge there. We take note of what Chair is saying, the cost-effective utilization of the current resources that have been allocated to the department. We welcome that, and also the engagements that he indicated that he would have with House during our review on issues of irregular wasteful expenditure. I would request Advocate Mashibini, through your permission, Chairperson, to come in and handle the other questions that were raised. Over to Advocate Mashibini.
Thank you very much, COC. Once again, honorable members, thank you for the opportunity. With regard to the comment which was made by Honorable Hendricks, I want to really thank him for the comment that he made, because it is true that it is very, very important that as a department, we need to have a strategy that we are actually applying in order to deal with this matter. As I've indicated earlier in the presentation, that when you look at our populations, for an example, with regard to the remandees per se, from last year, that is the 1st of March, up until the end of the financial year, one would be able to see that we have been having a steady decline. That is as a result of our remand reduction management strategy. Now, in that strategy also, we do have, in fact, we do have an overall and overarching overcrowding reduction strategy as a department, where we are basically addressing the issues of how do we go about ensuring that we keep our centers, you know, to the standard required accommodation levels by making use of various instruments, such as, for an example, your Section 63F, your Section 62A of the Criminal Procedure Act. And these are some of the strategies that we are using. I need also to highlight or emphasize what I also said earlier when I spoke about the available protocols which are in place, that we have, for an example, protocols in terms of COVID-19 as to how do we go about ensuring that even though we get this influx of these remandees into our centers, but we need to make sure that they don't end up infecting the entire prison population by means of, for an example, keeping them in quarantine for 2 weeks before they can be admitted into the broader community of the correctional center. Chairperson, furthermore, regarding the issues of innovation, yes, we do have innovation. Members would recall that earlier this year when we approached you in terms of the budget cut, especially on our compensation budget, we did indicate that we had various innovations that we put in place, such as, for an example, the establishment of an adjudication committee, which committee was then looking at our post-establishment in order to ensure that the people who are there in those positions, for example, where they don't have their principals, like your secretariat, your receptionist and so on, should be moved to those offices or branches where there is a need for such people to can be utilized instead of staying in those offices unutilized. We do have various mechanisms such as, for example, where we look at our budget. As and when people are leaving the department, we do make use of the savings that we get from these terminations in order to employ new members of the department. So there are innovations, Chairperson, that I need to indicate that the department is really following. But as it is commonly known, there are those capital projects which, despite the innovation that are in place, still necessitate that the national treasure should really assist to augment the department in as far as its overall budget is concerned. Chairperson, with regards to approaching national treasury for additional budget, I think I would request the CFO to respond to that particular one. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Just to add to what Advocate Mashipini said, particularly on the issue of creativity and the utilization of the current resources that have been allocated to that department. Currently, I want to assure the committee, we want to assure the committee as the department that during these trying times, we managed to contain the situation. We have plans and operating procedures to deal also with issues of COVID during these trying times. When we had our situation at Mzindo, as I indicated, we also dispatched another team to try and restore Mzindo in terms of the records, and also because some of the records were burned down, to ensure that we recover there. The issue of dynamic security, our officials, we are trying that during this period they should be dynamic when they are dealing with issues of security. Mr. Self, Honorable Self, also spoke about other incidences, if we have experienced them within our environment. Yes, there are some incidences that we experienced in KZN, some escapes in other facilities, like in Kalagabushe. Also, it was the inmates the day before yesterday, the remandees there. Again, it is clear that it is about the same issue of the campaign for the release of the former president. But we managed to rearrested two. One is still at large at Kalagabushe. So that is an indication of our officials that they should be alert during this period, and they need to be vigilant because it is not safe. Regarding other state property that has been torched, there is a vehicle that was attacked in Mamelodi that was used by our officials last week, and also some of our officials around Sefondane were attacked. The vehicle was stormed, and our officials during this period, honorable members, are not safe. When we go to work in uniform, we are not safe. But under the trying conditions, we are doing our work diligently. We're trying to motivate staff during this period because it is not easy. The people that we are getting are also angry, the ones that we have just received in our facilities. So I just wanted to emphasize that. Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and members.
Members, is there any question that has not been attended to? Honorable Newbold Johans.
Thank you, Chair. Not really a question. Okay, I waited for that. Thank you. Not really a question, but just a comment on the vaccination of the security officials. Maybe later you will brief us, but I just want to encourage all these officials in the department to vaccinate themselves because of third wave being extremely dangerous, and we saw the effects thereof. But please just, I want to encourage them all to go and vaccinate themselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Newbold Johans. Any other member? I think that's all. Honorable Janji, are you still on the line?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, maybe as the chair of the subcommittee, I will give this opportunity to you.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Just a brief comment. Otherwise, I'm covered by the colleagues in their various inputs. I think, Chair, in accepting and appreciating this correctional services presentation, we need to just, as you conclude, say a few things, because you have already indicated some of those things that must happen. I want to emphasize them. I think firstly, on this issue of reprioritization of their current budget, which I support, maybe, Chair, the first step before they go to Treasury is to come in front of the subcommittee on correctional services, because we've been with them, so we need to know what they are reprioritizing, because reprioritization means you forgo this and you take that one. And that for me is going to be critical, because wouldn't support you even if you're coming back with National Treasury, if we think what you are reprioritizing is not in line with the kind of things that we think must be done. So if they have done that exercise, as we coming back in the next week or so, we're going to have to prioritize that in our program, that they come and present this reprioritization given the kind of constraints. You've made the point, and the other members, that we don't have resources. So the issue is how best you manage with what you have and stay within that. And I am interested, therefore, Chair, as part of that subcommittee of this committee for us, to bring them in. And so as they live here, I think they need to prepare for that, Chair. Secondly, linked to that, this issue of attempted release, it's a very serious allegation here that, and we've got to stamp that, nip that in the bud before it begins, because it seems that you're going to have a different form of malls looting in correctional services. And the use of the former president is only a scapegoat from where I'm sitting. I don't even want to buy that kind of an excuse. We're going to have to deal with the issue, because it has become a fashionable opportunity now for people who had always thought about this, because they think that if they raise, they drop that name, it justifies every other thing that they do. So again, we want them to come, not just reacting to the one that is there, but to begin to present to us how are they preempting, kind of a proactive approach to these kind of issues. Because listening to Mr. Pikombambo, is beginning to say this, it's beginning to be a trend where this is. And so correctional services has got to be on guard. And we, because we're not going to come to these meetings, then we're told from one correctional center, the same thing has happened and all of that. And I want to say from now, even before that meeting, I'm not going to listen to an excuse of former President Jacob Zuma on this. issue. Because it's a non-issue for me. There's something bigger behind it other than that. So I just want to be clear on that, Chair. And as you say, they've started this investigation. I hope by the time we call them, they will be able to give us progress about this kind of issues. I, Chair, also would want, Chair, to ask that we get given a very comprehensive feedback about the vaccination of that of the sector, a full vaccination program with clear timelines, the different kind of categories in terms of how they do that. I think that is going to be important for us to understand. And my last point, the issue of the impact of COVID, not necessarily of COVID, of this unrest in relation to the HR issues, the bed space, issues of nutrition. I'm interested that the department prepares whatever mitigating measures do they are putting in place. It's not enough for me, for them to tell us about budget cuts. I'm quickly over that excuse. Because with budget cuts, life must go on. So I'm already over. So find another thing that you want to bring in terms of how you're going to embark on the mitigating measures around this thing that has not been planned correctly. So, and I accept that, but it is here with us now. You've got your personnel overstretched, issues of nutrition, HR, 189% overcrowding already. So we need to be on top of that game. Because if, for example, Honorable Yako says there's something in the Western Cape around taxi violence, and that we're asking NPA and police to be on top of that, you're likely to have this thing spread in different disguise and manifestations beyond KZN and Gauteng. And I won't get into, because I think you are in that space of where you can teach us on our own to understand the phenomenon beyond this. Because sometimes the phenomenon goes beyond the looters and those found in position of looted goods. As Honorable Swart was raising, we've not gotten to the bottom of the masterminds of this particular issue, which is beginning to change shapes from one space to another. Something more drastic and deeper needs to be attended to. Otherwise, we are going to be dealing with symptoms. I am not, I have precious time to just run around after symptoms than dealing with the real problem. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the subcommittee. Let me take this opportunity first to thank the minister, the deputy ministers, the department for preparing such a good presentation within a short space of time, both the NPA, the department, and correctional services. And thank the members for agreeing to have this meeting within a short space of time, noting that our country was on a verge of something very terrible because of working together. Our democracy is still stable. Thank you very much to everybody who's watching at home. There is an issue that Honorable Janji has raised. I think it must be extended to all our entities within the department. We are going to be calling you back to get a detailed program of vaccination. NPA, Justice, Legal Aid, correctional services, I think it's very important that we should be on top of that vaccination program, because without it, it is going to be very difficult to have functional courts and being in a position to ensure that justice is meted out properly. So I think our next meeting, which will be communicated soon, you should be, all of you, you should be presenting that vaccination plan, which will be much more detailed
how are you going to be how are you going to be ensuring that you cover everybody, including the presiding officers? Because a court cannot function if the presiding officer is not there, prosecutor is not there. So it's important that everybody needs to be covered. But thank you very much for ensuring that this meeting takes place. And I think we are convinced that you have been doing a lot of work despite the challenges that have been there in the last week or so. But you have been able to do a lot of work. And then for that, we thank you very much. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.